The greatest joy of all in making the film thrive was getting to co-create it with Kimberly. That's a quote from Foster Gamble, creator, host, and co-writer of the landmark documentary Thrive, What on Earth Will It Take? Kimberly Carter Gamble, who produced, directed, and co-wrote Thrive, is a determined and passionate advocate with an unshakable resolve to see humankind evolve into a place of true self-empowerment. And in the making of the film, she got to see firsthand how spirit can overcome any obstacles despite the odds. I spoke with Kimberly about the spiritual consciousness that permeates us all and how we can ignite that spirit to find solutions to the challenges of today. I've seen Thrive probably 6 or 7 times, the latest of which was yesterday, and it was really, I learned something new every time. I paid particular attention to the solution section because I knew I really wanted to take off on that, but perhaps you could talk a little bit about the spiritual underpinnings that would make the solutions even more reachable.
I guess for me, it's really all part of one continuum, but the inner aspects of reclaiming our power and the sort of earthly aspects or external aspects of reclaiming our power, you know, whatever we're doing, it starts with a sense of ourselves, knowing, you know, who are we on the deepest level of our purpose, outside of the cultural peer expectations and, you know, not like where there's no wrong answers, there's just fluid insights into who am I?
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, we find our place in spirit and on earth, and ideally in some blend. And so for me, it's actually, I love the question, and I'll tell you what I've been thinking about lately, what's kind of on my cutting edge, is the way in which our spiritual reality is the multidimensional reality that coexists with us in our 3D five senses plane.
Mm-hmm.
Operates, it's kind of like, I would say, a parallel reality, except it's not really parallel because it's constantly impacting and interwoven with our earthly existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually how I feel also about the agenda that operates through the money system to have huge impact in our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that expanded awareness means expanded awareness on all fronts. Having an awareness of what's going on in our midst, like, you know, if we're spending our money, what's happening with that money in the world?
Mm-hmm.
So expanding our awareness and learning about what's going on all fronts seems to be the task at hand for each of us. And what I found, and the thing that sort of informed me, in fact, I've had it on my whiteboard in my office throughout all the years of making Thrive, is that the universe responds to a combination of two things, and that's passionate intent and unconflicted behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of my motto, and I'll make sense out of what I just said about it happening on both realms, because one of the things that I've learned is that for spirit to get through and intuition to be strong, it actually requires that we have some quiet.
Absolutely.
Just we have to get still in order for the messages to come through and to be able to hear who are we, what's our purpose, and how is that related to a bigger purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we understand that, you know, what's our passionate intent, and then how do we have the behavior that supports that passionate intent happening? And for me, the stillness is a huge part of it. My passionate intent is to have expanded awareness.
Right, right.
Feel myself
mm-hmm.
a part of this bigger multidimensional universe.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, I need my behavior to align with what's going to make that possible. And I believe that's true also of what kind of world do I want to be living in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was profound for me in my own evolution to find out, you know, it happened to me in the, I went to UC Berkeley in the 60s. It was a wonderful time to be there and to be engaged in, you know, really waking up to world-changing possibilities. And I was attending these, you know, an organization I was part of to help stop coal and nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
And on my way to the meetings, I would get my paycheck at the end of the week from my job, and I would drive into Bank of America parking lot, drive through, deposit my check, and then go to my meetings. And I didn't understand that Bank of America was actually funding the same companies that I was then driving across town trying to stop, right?
Mm, right.
I didn't understand that that's the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was essentially having conflicted, well, and when I say funding, I mean they give them the good loans and they use our deposits to do that, like we described Thrive.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that I was acting with conflicted behavior. So my passionate intent to help the world be safer environmentally wasn't combined with my actions. And so I really spent a lot of time trying to watch that. Like, are my actions actually supporting
right. My
passionate intent? And so my passionate intent to be all-inclusive, you know, the notion of naming that there's an agenda that's having very destructive impact on the planet, that doesn't mean that we're not connected to everybody, including the perpetrators of that agenda.
That's right.
Or that there isn't our own internalized version of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, those aren't either-or realities. It's just simply naming an obstacle in our evolution that needs our attention in order to get beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's kind of not setting it up as that there's a spiritual healing or an earthly healing. It's that we need to be tapping into our whole selves, beginning with knowing ourselves, which shows up as, you know, our inclinations and our quirks and our passions and our ultimately our purpose.
Right, right. Well, you know, you make a good point when you talk about the importance of silence as routine in an individual's life. And I could not concur more, Kimberly. I've always been an advocate, and I think I told you offline that I'm an only child and perhaps had the benefit, because I didn't have sisters and brothers running around, to understand silence on a regular basis. But in that understanding, I cherished that silence. And as I got older, I realized that in order to reach some semblance of spiritual wholeness, that periodic silence was necessary, whether it be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and however it needs to be done. Some people call it prayer, some people call it meditation, and maybe it's just silence where you're alone with your thoughts. There's so much to distract us from being silent now. We can get into the conspiratorial aspects of that, if you wish, in terms of that being part of the agenda, to make sure we don't spend time in silence. So we'll never have the opportunity to discern. But I agree with you. I think that silence is something, I don't care how busy you are, it is fundamental to align all aspects of our lives. And yet so many people, and I do, I go out on my own and, you know, one by one, and I don't force this down people's throats, but when we get into similar discussions, I'll say, do you take time to be quiet? Well, I don't have time. Well, you sleep, you take time to sleep. 5 minutes of silence is golden.
Yeah. And I think it's the other part of it is to actually stay with it long enough. I remember one of the most important things someone told me when I was first getting into meditating was learning how to sit through the discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there are always, I don't know anybody who hasn't had the thoughts come up that are uncomfortable in the course of being quiet with ourselves. And to stay past that, to where you actually know that that's not the whole picture. That's some thought. Maybe it's the thought that, I really should be doing something, or, I wish I hadn't done something that I did, or
right.
Or feeling misunderstood. You know, there's just recurring things that will come. And I think learning how to stay with it and actually find a peace that transcends those thoughts, you know, the good news is no one can take it away from you once you get it.
That's right.
Once you get a relationship with yourself on that level, so much more becomes possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like for myself, you know, making the choice to be kind of a controversial figure by making a very bold movie, you know, and, I just feel so grateful that I have the relationship with myself that makes it possible.
Yes.
To endure whatever it is that somebody else's reaction needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's kind of the bottom line is, you know, another thing somebody said to me once that was really helpful was about public speaking. They said the bottom line is you have to speak as if you believe people want to hear what you've got to say.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and how do you get to that? How does anybody, you don't, I think we probably do start out thinking, of course people would want to hear what I have to say, but, you know, that'll get beat out of you pretty soon after elementary school. You know, and so how to have that kind of just relationship and trust with yourself that you actually, each one of us is truly a unique expression of a human being, and we need us all.
Mm-hmm.
So our differences are great, and those quirky things about us and how we've learned, you know, it's all our vulnerability that touches people anyway. You're not supposed to, like, get it all together before you speak up.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right. You know, you just brought up something I love when this happens that will segue into my next question so beautifully, and that is to talk about the Taurus. I could talk about the Taurus forever because I think it is so incredibly, it's a metaphor and literal at the same time to really show us the omnipotence and the infinite ability of ourselves through this model of the Taurus. So before we really get into that, and I want to segue into, you talk about the uniqueness of each individual, but also the unification of those individuals as likened to the Taurus. Talk a little bit, Kimberly, if you will, about what the Taurus is for those in our audience that may not have seen the film. I'm assuming most have, but if you could give us a little summary on what that is.
Sure. And if you want to see it, you haven't, it's free at thrivemovement.com.
Yes.
But I would say, so the Taurus is the one sort of fundamental pattern in the universe that life uses at every scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you just think about it, you know, life forms are infinite and immense, and so that nature would be kind of efficient in having something that works regardless of scale. It's sort of like the example that helped me initially was with the Phi spiral, which is when you see a fern unfurl or a fetus, that shape is a particular shape that's replicated throughout the universe in all modes because it allows something to grow in proportion. So it won't, like, one part of it won't get all huge and long while another part doesn't grow. So there are these patterns in nature that are replicated, and the one pattern that is self-sustaining is the Taurus. It's T-O-R-U-S. It's a mathematical term, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it, so you can picture a Taurus as like a whirlpool in water, because that shows, so a whirlpool is actually distinct within the water, but it's made up of water.
Yeah.
So that is what is unique about a Taurus. And so the two things that are most fascinating to me about it are that, one, you can understand it, not just mathematically, but functionally. What are its properties? And given that everything that human beings have been involved in has pretty much been developed in an unsustainable way, you know, our economic systems, our relation to the environment, there's so our whole international affairs dynamics, you know, it's all unsustainable the way it is. And so here we have in our midst this template of sustainability
mm-hmm.
that nature gives us. So in that way, I've been really interested in it, and I have actually done some work unpacking what are some of the features of the Taurus that can be applied to our social system.
Right, right. I have to fit this in, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
You just nailed this on the head, because I have a comment here by, you know, some of our greatest thinkers in history and current day have picked up on this fundamental pattern as well. And one of them was David Bohm. David Bohm was a big proponent of the holographic model of the universe.
Yep.
And his landmark seminal work, really, Wholeness in the Implicate Order, really gets into that aspect. But here's a quote that I've known for years from him, and it says, he said, "We individuals are like whirlpools in a stream. We have identity. We just don't have distinct borders." Is this not perfectly aligned with how you just described it?
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, that combination of distinct and unified, for me, you know, the nature of any relationship that I've been in, it's like the art of it is, how do you keep yourself and have still a blended, unified sense of partnership?
Mm-hmm.
That's true with couples. It's true within, you know, cities to states, states to countries, countries to the international arena. Like, anytime there's something that is a sub, you know, a part of something, that dance between how to hold on to the distinct uniqueness and not get lost in what is whole has been, it's always the dance. And
yes,
to me, the Taurus is a completely valuable picture of it that I have all the time, because you don't lose sight of our being one. We are, you know, it's like the whirlpool and the water are all water.
That's right.
It's just to recognize the distinction within it is also very important, and that's where I think, you know, our challenge now in this time is to really claim both our awareness of our unification as one with all life, and are really getting that we each have some unique role to play.
Perfect. Perfectly said. On that note, Kimberly, I just want to take a minute or so. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Every life on Earth has the capability of knowing the world in a much more powerful way than what we've settled for. And Gaiam TV is there to support your journey into knowledge, awareness, and awakening. Our vision is to raise global consciousness by bringing viewers original interviews, inspiring films, and engaging series on today's most sought-after topics. We invite you to try Gaiam TV free for 10 days by visiting www.gaiamtv.com/CLN to claim your free trial. That's gaiamtv.com/CLN. You won't look at your life or your world the same way again.
We're back, and I wanted to have you continue on that theme with the Taurus, because I think there's just so many clues implicit in that model of the Taurus. You know, I recall in one of your interviews that you gave not too long ago about how you use the image of the Taurus in your meditation, in your visualization, and I'm wondering if that's something that others of us might use as a tool to, in our meditation, in our silence, to indeed achieve that balance and to be able to dance that dance, as you say.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I just returned for my 60th birthday. I went to the Monroe Institute.
Fantastic.
Which I encourage anybody to check out. And it's really a place for consciousness exploration. And one of the things that they have as part of this process where you get into, the gist of it is that you're there to get the hemispheres of your brain in balance, because in balance we can sort of have a portal to extra dimensions and allow our sense of self to expand even further. And in doing that, one of the things that you do is you picture yourself as an energy body in the form of a Taurus, where the energy is coming out around, you know, from the top of your head and then wraps around down along the side and comes back up through the bottom of your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And we have beautiful graphics, both in the movie Thrive and on our website at thrivemovement.com, and that really provide the visual, because everything is toroidal. The entire universe uses this Taurus energy dynamic, and so it's the perfect way to experience yourself as a like at the whirlpool in the water, you're the torus within all the tori.
Sure.
As you're tripping through the cosmos. And so it was really fun because we could just pull up images from the Thrive website to help people visualize. So I really encourage that anybody look there, because I think it really does add a beautiful visual component. And I know we just gave some of the visuals to HeartMath also, which is a wonderful organization.
Absolutely.
That I encourage people to check out also, just because being able to picture it really helps.
I think so. And I think that, you know, all that we're talking about really does lend credence to the holographic model, that with this fundamental pattern in nature that is literally ubiquitous throughout our universe, you might think of the largest torus in our universe, or not in the universe, but say around our planet, would be the magnetic field itself. That would be one aspect of the whole, and yet we as individuals mimic that same pattern. Therefore, the whole is in the part, that being us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's sort of when you get that, you know, what it does for me. Oh, sorry, my phone's ringing on the other line for the background noise.
That's okay.
But anyway, when you get that, I think it's empowering, because I realize that my thoughts and my actions impact that larger field.
No question.
Just like that larger field impacts me. So it goes both ways. So instead of feeling like, oh my gosh, there's just this huge reality that exists, and I'm just one speck in the midst of it, it's like, no, actually, you're part of a trio. You know, that's the way I relate to it. I relate to that there are sort of forces that we need to be aware of on an earthly plane that impact hugely how our lives go, and especially how the whole human family life is going.
Right.
That we need to, you know, feel connected to, whether or not our life has ease in it or not. There are just huge numbers of people who need our attention.
Right, right.
So yeah. There's that reality, and then there's our personal daily, you know, hourly life, and then there's this whole multidimensional domain, and that we're really an important part on with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So our thoughts matter and our actions matter, and that's where taking the time to know ourselves becomes, you know, it's like really sort of the bottom line. Everything
mm-hmm.
else comes from that.
Absolutely. And yet there's still so many people, it seems, Kimberly, that don't, I don't know whether I want to say believe that to be true, but maybe they don't. I don't know what the answer is, but how do we try to gently influence or impart, because I don't believe in pushing anybody to do anything, but to gently impart to our neighbors, our friends, our loved ones, that is an absolute necessity.
Well, you know, it's funny, I think, and one of the things we do offer at ThriveMovement.com is tools for exploring your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's under What Can I Do and Top 10 Actions. And
mm-hmm.
And I think that it's, you know, I don't know anybody who doesn't want a meaningful, empowered life. I think that things have been set up where, you know, one, it takes so much just to survive,
mm-hmm.
That people are very distracted, which is one of the reasons that I've devoted so much of my life to sort of exposing these crazy systems that make that be so, because it doesn't have to be that way. We can have a completely different way of structuring our reality here, and I believe we will.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot what I was just going to say. I know. You know, I've been very encouraged to see. So people they're distracted, for one, with just kind of surviving. But the other thing is that there's been so many ways to be wrong. You know, it's just the way things get set up, that, like, the whole education system, you know, where you pick out a few people who are doing it right and you make them examples, but you kind of break the peer,
mm-hmm.
like, we're in this together to learn feeling.
Right.
And I think that, you know, for many people, if you were to say, what's your purpose, it's sort of like, yikes, you know, I don't know, and I must be wrong for not knowing, but if I it's like you're not wrong. There's been no support for figuring that out. And
that's right.
Yet when you do gain access to figuring out, I mean, you know, we all got born. That was huge to be the one sperm and egg that made it.
That's
you've
true.
Already, like, won a bigger race than you'll ever be in, you know?
Yeah.
And so to be here with this exquisite design of life on an amazing planet, there's probably more to it than just entertaining yourself and dying, you know? And knowing that means that I think it's just a matter of giving people examples of, one, how, you know, when you're living a meaningful life, then people know that that's possible, and to provide just whatever tools we've each found along the way and see if that might be helpful for someone else. That's what we've tried to do at ThriveMovement.com. But I'm very inspired by people, I have to say. I mean, in the last 10 months, 8 million people have seen Thrive, and we've mm-hmm. never even marketed it. That's just word of mouth. And we've been traveling around, and there are, everywhere we go, you know, full auditoriums filled with people, all ages, all classes, all races, all different orientations in life, all different political beliefs and all the rest, who they're all looking for a better world and mm-hmm. for their place in it.
Sure.
So I actually think that there are way more awake people ready to engage at this next level of self-inquiry and external engagement mm-hmm. than I would believe if all I did was, you know, watch the news or even just stay in my own neighborhood.
Right. Well, you're seeing it firsthand, of course. You're really immersing yourself and really checking the temperature of the people out there. But, you know, that brings me to my next question, and that is, or comment, I will say, as you know, there's an old adage that says there's power in numbers, and where I think that is certainly true, it's also been said that mathematically speaking, it only takes the square root of 1% of a given population to shift an entire paradigm. Now, I know that Ken Wilber said maybe it's 10%, but the bottom line is, if it only takes a percentage of the whole to change the whole, you know, we don't necessarily need all 7 billion people to shift the general paradigm,
right.
Although we love it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, I think it was 6% of people participated in the American Revolution. And in fact, you know, the way I think about it is, for whatever reason, some people feel more comfortable in roles of leadership.
Sure.
And for those of us for whom that's true, our job is to create systems that make it easier for other people to make good choices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think about recycling. Like, most people now go out and they sort their trash into that which is recyclable and that which isn't. Now, most of the people who do that don't do that because they understand the full ramifications of garbage and waste treatment on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It's because there's a blue can and a green can or whatever on the, at the edge of their driveway, and if someone made it easy for them to do that. And I think that, you know, whatever you can do to help create something that makes it easier for other people to make good choices, do it. Because
right.
It's not going to be everybody who, you know, wakes up to it or is in a position that they can take responsibility for leading the change or manifesting their own, you know, great full potential. But there are many who will once it's easier for them to do that.
Right,
and
I agree.
So I think rather than, for me, I mean, I guess I have to say, I think there are way more people than I thought there were who are awake and ready. So I'm feeling extremely inspired. And even if, I mean, I feel confident that we have enough right now to shift the paradigm and that that's what's happening. Because as long as we can transcend this political polarity and stop arguing among ourselves and recognize that we are in this together and that we cultivate a vision, and this is the other part, I think, of where the spiritual, you know, reclaiming our power in the inner world and spiritually is so important. It's to have a vision of what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like step one. And the thing I have been sorry to see is how many people and young people in particular, have not been encouraged or to take the time to actually cultivate a vision of what's possible and then to go toward that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very compromised, kind of like, well, we could maybe fix this a little bit or, you know, stop this one horrible thing from being quite so bad, instead of actually transforming
right.
life on this planet and what it means to be human.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that our job, you know, whoever it is that finds ourselves at this cutting edge, to just make it as easy as possible for everyone else.
Right. Well, you know, you mentioned that having the vision first, which really is the template that we then manifest on the physical plane. And I remember, I think it was when you and Foster were in Santa Fe, New Mexico,
yeah. uh-huh.
that you did a wonderful sort of Q&A and workshop with a group, and Foster had the group go into sort of a guided meditation,
yeah.
envisioning specifically, you know, a world that is now absent of violence and greed and all those things that we have right now. And I was actually taking a shower. We have a TV in our bathroom, and so I have a habit of watching interviews like this when I'm in the shower or in the bathroom. And I found myself going through the visualization as the water is pouring on me, which is great, and it was effective. I don't know that I've even taken the time to really break that down and really get into a dance again, a dance or a play where that was the case. I can see where that would be effective. And so I personally would recommend that to everybody listening, to really get specific and bring the texture, all the sensory experience to that.
Yeah. I think that's actually one of the ways into finding out one's own purpose, is to actually allow yourself to picture this world without any strife, where people have enough and the planet is thriving and you're here in just the glory to pursue whatever it is that most fascinates you.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you tune into that and then come back and apply that on behalf of where we really are,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that you integrate like just what it is that your own passion gets to be related to your vision of what's possible, so that we're not just coming from kind of a scarcity place even in our visioning.
Right. Right. That's perfect. Hold that thought, Kimberly. We're going to take one more quick break and we'll be right back.
In these changing times, the journey toward global consciousness has never been more important. Gaiam TV is the first online video library dedicated to supporting your journey toward global and personal discovery. Our viewers enjoy unlimited access to our vast selection of inspiring interviews, engaging films, and award-winning wellness videos. And we invite you to try it for free. Visit www.gaiamtv.com/cln to start your free trial. That's gaiamtv.com/cln. The journey starts now.
Okay, great. We're back. I want to ask you a question about the shift. This is sort of the big word these days, the shift. Some people align it directly with the Mayan calendar's end date of December 21st, 2012. I happen to believe it's a bit more complex than that. And yet, I think it's clear to many of us that we are on the threshold of a shift on some level. Where does that play? Or maybe I should frame it as, where does the timing of this movie coming out and all of the pertinent information that's come with it align with what many of us feel to be the shift?
Well, you know, I think everybody's feeling it in one way or another, like just the energy's rising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the amount that people feel uncomfortable with how much is known about all of us, right? Just the kind of invasion of privacy. You can feel it rising on that level. You feel the international tensions and the amount of fear that goes on that level, things are rising. And at the same time, you can feel it where there are just more people coming together. I mean, everywhere there's a problem, there are people working on solutions. And I think it's really important to recognize that. And what I see, and you know, what our intention was in making Thrive was really to kind of lay out two things. One was a capsule in the form of media, the movie, to say, here is what we think is a minimum sufficient kind of understanding of what's going on and who we have the potential to be. So that then you can go to the website, thrivemovement.com, and explore for yourself any part of this that's most interesting to you, including exploring your own purpose and joining with others at the Solutions Hub to, you know, share best practices and join together in effective and informed solutions. And so our part in it was to say, you know, step one is to get informed and speak up and engage with each other, mm-hmm. whether in whatever it is, that the domain that is of most interest and passion to you. And so Thrive was intended to provide the tool of coherence to help facilitate that. And, you know, I don't think that my own belief is that, you know, this overused word of sustainable and unsustainable, I mean, it basically, I see us careening toward World War III. And when you figure out it's sort of already happening economically, and then you look at, you know, where we are now posturing in relation to Iran, and for me as a researcher, you know, I followed the money and understand that, you know, these countries, Libya and Lebanon and Sudan and Syria and Iraq, they, you know, when they changed selling oil and they didn't want to sell it for dollars anymore, that's what influences our foreign policy. That's what we're doing here, is Iran is saying they don't want to sell oil for dollars anymore, and that's what's behind the curtain of our international foreign policy here. And so knowing that empowers me then to kind of get a hold of my relationship with my financial life. Like, am I banking at these big banks that are a part of this huge mega corporate banking scam, because right. I have the power as an individual not to participate in that. Nonviolent non-participation. That's what Gandhi and King were both into.
Sure.
And I believe that's what's happening. I believe that we have the power to have a nonviolent revolution in the form of non-participation as we wake up to what's going on. But the same way in the meditation, I think we have to get through the discomfort of our own thoughts, and mm-hmm. I think on the earthly level, we have to get through the discomfort of recognizing that things are really in a sinister, bad way out there. Mm-hmm. Stuff's happening that, you know, we really need to take action to stop from happening, and we can, and we are doing that.
Yeah.
So I think that, to me, I feel very hopeful and empowered, and we've got a big task. Yes. That we're in the midst of.
We do. And highlighting your point about the, you know, looking at the outer conflict and trying to reconcile that, but also the inner, whether it be inner chatter or whatever. Again, the macro and the micro, or the micro is a reflection of the macro. That's very interesting. And maybe this would be a poignant point to bring up. I love Barbara Marx Hubbard, and I'm so glad that she was included in the film. She said something so important to me. She said, our crisis is a birth and everyone is needed. Our crisis is a birth and everyone is needed. And I took that to mean simply that crisis and challenge is a springboard for opportunity. And even more important, there is opportunity implicit in challenge. And so when I asked the question about there being sort of this possible cosmological shift going on, might this challenge be that, you know, the world that we're talking about on the external level, be that nudge that's trying to get us to look inside and transcend and truly evolve?
I think so, absolutely. And, you know, Barbara has just been a wonderful influence in my life. And I know, you know, just her whole notion of conscious evolution, and that evolution has, you know, kind of happened to us for a long time, where we, you know, oh, look, we have opposing thumbs. That's helpful, you know.
Yeah.
These markers as we evolve, and that it's time in human evolution to now engage consciously in our evolution. And to take it to the next step, and to know ourselves, and to create unconflicted behavior, so that we actually act in accord with who we want to be and who we believe that we can be. Mm-hmm. And I see that that's what's coming. And there are so many, you know, fabulous people from all cultures rising up to help, you know, each add their piece. And one of the things that we've tried to do is, you know, cohere many of them in the film and, mm-hmm. and more by being able to just provide the solutions hub where people can just write in. Because I don't think it's going to be the, you know, big leaders who do this. It's going to be grassroots efforts all over the world.
No question.
That's what's going to shift this. It's one thought at a time. And
right.
Those thoughts and actions end up multiplying hugely. And I think just recognizing the power of our own thoughts and deeds is, you know, one of the most important things we can do is to wake up to that.
That's right. And perhaps that's the way it should be, Kimberly. You know, I've always been a believer in grassroots is the most effective. Who's to say that big is better? Who's to say that leadership, as we understand it, is the ideal model? You know, again, we're really living in this sort of dichotomy. In fact, I wrote an article not too long ago called 2012 and the Dichotomy of Consciousness. And really, it kind of, I lost my train of thought, kind of showcases that both are really at a peak right now, but the shift is really showing us that grassroots individuality is really what's going to change the paradigm. I think that's the point I wanted to make. I kind of lost my train of thought there for a minute, but yeah.
That's a good point anyway. I think that's absolutely it, you know, to just realize that whole back to the Taurus, you know.
Right.
That distinct and unified, and distinct is the individual, and I think that when we empower ourselves, from that we empower each other
mm-hmm.
to hold the vision and practice the behavior that supports the vision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your 10 tactical actions are wonderful, and I think that, you know, there's not one person that can't participate with relative ease in at least one of these things. These are all important. I think they have to be in motion all at one time. But let's talk about the intangible again. I mean, this whole conversation is really centered around that, you know, the spiritual aspect sort of undergirding the five sense level. But if you were to give anyone suggestions on, I won't put you on the spot and say find 10 intangible things to do, but several suggestions. You know, we've already talked about silence and meditation as a way of really getting clear on our inner power. But are there some other things that you might suggest, especially in light of your recent trip to the Monroe Institute, that they could do on a daily basis that will ultimately help everything that we're trying to solve?
Well, I think probably one of the most important things people could do is to be kind with themselves.
Absolutely.
And gentle, you know, and to cultivate an open mind and an open heart, because I noticed how easy it is for people to just shut each other up and squelch each other's budding awakening. And I think, and I know for me in my life, you know, I just really had such a profound experience at the Monroe Institute. And as I was mentioning to you before this call, you know, one of the things that happened for me as I had the grace of an out-of-body experience was when I got to the kind of the veil where I was making the choice, really, because it's a body asleep, mind awake place to venture out. And as I was at that veil, I realized the trust that I had in the spirit world. And rather than fear, I really felt like I'm comfortable here in these expanded domains. And I think the reason I was able to have that was because my paradigm has shifted before.
Right.
And I think it's really important to realize that as we, you know, awaken to who we are, stuff's going to shift. You know, we have not been told the truth about what's going on, about who we are or what's possible. And awakening to that, there's a lot of shifting around that goes on. And I think that if we just are gentle with ourselves for whatever our resistance is, whatever you know, actions we wish we hadn't taken or things we've wished we didn't say. Like, it's never too late to start over.
That's right.
And to just be kind with ourselves and each other, and to have an open mind and an open heart. And then again, I do think that just finding comfort in the quiet does allow something deeper to come through. And to me, that's the comfort, you know, the comfort of integrity, you know, a peace in my heart comes from a sense of living my values, mm-hmm. which is what integrity is.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't even know if I'm doing that if I didn't have a little bit of quiet time.
That's right.
Sort of reflect and go, wow, so where am I in relation to this, you know?
Yeah.
And then live from it, and to live from it in a way that is as kind and inclusive as possible, and just keep coming back around to who we want to be again and again.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. And I don't think it can be said enough. I really and truly hope everyone listening to this wonderful conversation will not just hear it, but really listen and take in that message. Take 5 minutes, if you will, 5 minutes, no matter what, and close the door and be with yourself.
Yeah.
And not in a critical way, just be. Just be. We've heard it. It sounds cliche, but trust us, it works. And on I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kimberly.
I was going to say, I know with my kids, I used to say, you know, when they wake up in the morning, to begin, you know, just lying there and picture their day,
mm-hmm.
and picture themselves in their day, and how do they want to be, and what do they want to be connected to as what's driving them.
Mm-hmm.
Before even getting out of bed. And, of course, that gives way to a different kind of quiet if you just begin with that. If quiet mm-hmm. looks scary, then
yeah.
begin with a prayer or a vision.
Right.
And then from that stuff, more stuff comes that just has it become increasingly comfortable.
Mm-hmm. I think that's wonderful. Well, your children have the benefit of a wonderful, insightful mother. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
I can't help but bring up one of the many people that you interviewed in this fantastic film, Akilah Sherrills. I don't know if I'm saying that
properly. Sherrills. Uh-huh.
Sherrills, close. And, of course, he was the gentleman that helped to broker the truce between the two gang leaders in Los Angeles, the Bloods and the Crips. I think that's just such a moving, although it's a very short bite in terms of him telling the story.
Yeah.
When he talks about the embrace that was held by the two gang leaders, one of them, of course, that I think that had extended his hand, was fearful, not knowing how the other would react. But then when that embrace was held, as Akilah told that story, you saw tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
You got that on film. And of course, I'm sure that triggered lots of tears in a lot of the viewers' eyes. But I took that as another gentle but poignant reminder that, look at us, we respond to love. Justin Akilah retelling that story brought tears because we recognize love and happiness. We know what that looks like.
Yes.
He saw that. He was witness to that. And to me, that was just, again, a reminder that we should be hopeful.
Yes.
Because as long as we can keep that open heart, he had to have an open heart to be able to have those tears.
Yes.
I was just very touched by that.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was so hard to do that. I mean, we had like 400 hours of footage. We had to get down to 2 hours. But there's more of Akilah at RideMovement.com where he gets into longer stories that we couldn't include in the movie. But it's very inspiring. And I think that absolutely people want to be good.
They do.
And to live in a better world. And when we get... You know, one of the problems with the consolidated media the way it is now is really we just hear the worst about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such fear-mongering that it's, you know, we end up more suspicious and separate when, in fact, one of the things that Thrive can do is to help you see, like, there are so many people working on helping to make things better. And Akilah is certainly one of them. It was his birthday this week.
Oh.
And, he's just a lovely, committed guy. And one of the things he said that we've had interesting conversations about and I've learned from him is he said, you know, conflict isn't the problem. It's unresolved conflict.
Mm.
And I really think that that's true, and that if we realize, you know, we have the capacity to solve our problems nonviolently, we right. can do that, right. then I think that that really helps us to not be so afraid of dealing with the problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. I thought that was a poignant account, and I'll make sure to go to the ThriveMovement.com website and look at that additional footage.
Yeah.
I want to talk about from Akila to Aikido.
Uh-huh.
How's that for a transition? The martial art that your husband has been involved in for so long.
Yeah.
This too struck me. Now, I know I'm not going to get the pronunciation of the founder's name right, so I may not even say it. We'll just say a quote
Morie Ueshiba,
the founder of Aikido. He said, Aikido is not a technique to fight and defeat an enemy. It is a way to reconcile the world and make human beings one family. And this immediately struck me as somehow being alchemical in its philosophy. And that the goal, and I should also say, it wasn't necessarily the words as much as the footage that you were showing as those words were coming out. You see two individuals that look like they're about to come together in conflict, and one sort of takes over the other, but at the very end, he sort of puts a loving arm around the, quote, opponent, and it almost looks like he's transmuting that anger or whatever hostility there was into love. So in other words, you know, many of us, we think we have to get rid of evil. We have to eradicate and get rid of, and I don't know if it's so much that as it is taking that energy, because as we know, energy cannot be extinguished. It simply changes form.
Yeah.
So I found that to be very, I guess you would call, alchemical in its philosophy.
Yeah, that's great. I hadn't heard it described that way, but I think that's really right. You know, I think the basis of Aikido, and, you know, Foster's just, I have always said he's continued to practice Aikido, just not on the mat, because it is a philosophy, and I relate to it as a philosophy of recreation, where that transforming the energy of the opponent energy coming our way to blend with it and take the lead is really what it's all about. And it happens by first, you know, having an accurate assessment of what's going on, like what is the energy that's coming in order to be blended with and move.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where, you know, Thrive comes in, because it's our attempt to say, well, here's what the energy is, so that we can blend and then obsolete it from, it's like, you know, we don't ever suggest harming or holding bad thoughts about other people. What we want to do is obsolete them from being in power. They should
right.
not be making decisions about what's going on the planet, because they're not healthy people and their worldview is not inclusive of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, we have to understand the nature of what's coming at us and then blend to lead to have that not be the power structure anymore. And we can do that because it relies on our participation.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's a really beautiful kind of metaphor for how to deal with any kind of conflict, and the fact that it can be, like, you know, it even happens on the level of in a conversation with someone, you know, if someone's expressing something and they really feel heard, the energy shifts. It's when they don't feel heard that it just keeps on escalating into a different level of conflict.
Oh, I agree.
And so to me, Aikido is kind of the practice of hearing and moving. Hearing and then moving it into something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned a lot about that from Foster. That's sort of the motto and, I guess, philosophy that he lives with.
I think it's a perennial philosophy indeed.
Yeah,
yeah, I do. Let me read to you. We're starting to wind down. I had a couple more things I wanted to hit on,
okay.
but I wanted to. I love quotes. I'm a quote collector, I guess you could say. So here's yet another by actually a good friend and colleague, NDE researcher, author PMH Atwater, who I believe has had, oh gosh, three distinct NDEs, and she's gone on to be one of the premier researchers in NDE work.
Near-death experience,
forgive me, near-death experience. But I quoted her in an article that I did about 9/11. This was written by me about 10 years ago, but again, kind of looking at 9/11, less from the conspiratorial standpoint at the time, but more from a collective consciousness
event, if you will. But here's what she said in that context. She says, it is time to awaken. Our complacency comes from putting things ahead of service and investment, a consumerism gone mad, and a spirituality deemed little more than New Age nonsense. Now, she was talking about this in the context of, could this event and others like it, beyond the five sense level, have been a wake-up call, and what I've termed something to shake us out of this, you know, coma of complacency, if you will. But the point I wanted to stress here is a spirituality deemed little more than New Age nonsense. Kimberly, do you ever think there'll be a time where the masses will regard spirituality as the prime versus the second or third or not at all? Will there be a time where we fully become spiritual again?
You know, I kind of can't imagine that we won't in one way or another, because I think it's all about balance, you know, and we've just been, we've cultivated a way of being that puts translators in the way of all of our relation to our own higher power.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the major religions, one of the things is that there's some place you have to go or person that you have to have as the mediator. And I think that that's not always the case. People are able to transcend that within the religions.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the gift of a non-denominational spirituality is that it's ultimately so empowering of an individual to explore what is your truth,
mm-hmm.
and then to align with that. And I think that, my belief is that when you understand how worldviews are shaped in culture, you realize the role of the media and the education systems. And those are owned by very few people in this day and age. So that, you know, of course, the empowerment of the individual is not what's happening, or our spirituality, because that's not what's going to serve the interests of those few who currently are dominating the cultivation of the worldview that
mm-hmm.
we're all in the midst of here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yes, I do think it will happen that people reclaim their spiritual nature.
Mm-hmm.
I think it kind of happens now in a closeted way anyway.
Yes, yeah.
I think that, you know, when you watch when there's any kind of a crisis, you know, people come together, and they come together often in a very high way.
Yes.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely from a place of understanding, of a compassionate place.
Mm-hmm. And, of course,
and, you know, that's sort of the action that comes from spirituality. You can get there any way you want to.
Right.
But it's acknowledging our connection with each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, on that note, I want to wind down with a prospect for us all to contemplate, and then maybe get a couple of quick thoughts. Now, this, maybe I shouldn't have ended with this. Maybe I should have started with this, but I also found this to be poignant. Another quote. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Jacob's Ladder. One of my favorite movies to date. It's a bit of a horror movie, but kind of a psychological thriller, but with very, very poignant messages. It's Jacob's played by Tim Robbins, and he's a very distressed Vietnam vet who's sort of assessing his life from different perspectives. But he sees a chiropractor named Louie, who's played by Danny Aiello. And this is a quote that has stuck with me for, over 20 years at this point. He says to Jacob, "If you're frightened of dying and you're holding on, you'll see devils tearing your life away. But if you've made your peace, then the devils are really angels trying to free you from the earth." This is why this quote is poignant to me, Kimberly. And this may be a hard pill for some of us to swallow. You know, there's a lot going on with the revelation of information about what's really going on. It's very easy to say, the bad guys, let's go get the bad guys, let's go eradicate the bad guys. But, and that's on a five sense level, and that's very real. And you brought that out, brought us so much important information. But I guess my appeal is to those on a level beneath the five sense, and that is, could they again, unbeknownst to the perpetrators even, be simply characters that we view as devils trying to get us to see who we really are? And when we do, i.e. when we make peace with ourselves, do they then become angels really trying to set us free and evolve us. That's my thought.
I'm not sure I completely understand it.
Okay.
I do. Yeah, I mean, I can say that I believe that the crisis can be a birth in that way, and
yes.
that I believe that fear of death is something that, I mean, I hope that we can all learn to talk about death in
mm-hmm.
a new way
mm-hmm.
as part of our awakening, because, you know, if we were all going to Italy, we'd be talking about Italy.
Right.
The fact that we're all going to be dying and we don't talk about it is just kind of an unfortunate thing, because the fear of dying then can be such a subterranean text in
right,
what we
right.
do.
Mm-hmm.
So if what you're talking about is liberating ourselves by just sort of confronting all that is, including that our life here is finite. I don't personally believe that our soul's journey is finite. I just believe that
right.
this particular lifetime is. That's my belief.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That way, I think so. I don't personally believe that, and I believe we can benefit, I'll say that, from the awakening that's required of us now, for
mm-hmm.
sure. I don't believe it was benevolently inspired
mm-hmm.
that we are in the pickle that we are, but I do believe that we can make something good out of it
mm-hmm.
and transform.
I think we're kind of on the same page. I probably should have explained a little bit better. You know, in the quote, it says, if you're frightened of dying and holding on. So in this context, he's really giving Jacob, who's actually in the process of dying, he's trying to tell him to make peace with yourself so you can move on. I was really kind of using that as a metaphor, dying not in the physical sense, but really, you know, let's face it, our society is spiritually dying. We're holding on. We're holding on to false paradigms. And with fear, to me, dying and fear are really sort of the same thing in this context. So if we can make peace with ourselves, i.e. become that spiritual being that we are anyway, take the time for that silence, not march to the beat of somebody else's drum. Once that happens, those that looked so bad, even though on a 5-sense level they are, no question about it, but they suddenly, again, using that alchemical term, are transmuted. Maybe there is a reason. And again, this is one you kind of have to sit and have a think with. Could there be a larger purpose, even for them, as evil as it appears to be, to get us to a point of evolution that otherwise we never would have seen? I don't know the answer, but I have thought about it.
Yeah, I don't know. But here we are. Here we are with it, yeah.
So,
I don't know if we never would have been here otherwise or anything like that.
Yeah,
but I
yeah.
do believe that we will all be transformed in
yeah.
the transformation, those who perpetrate this and
right.
those who have been the recipients of it.
Right. So again, I probably should have put that topic somewhere in the middle or the top, because, I mean, we could really have a whole philosophical discussion
yeah.
around that. And I think it really just begs the big question of, you know, what is this? Why are we here? And, you know, what's the purpose? And that maybe can be a part two for us, Kimberly.
Yeah, great.
Listen, you have been a dear. I know that our paths shall cross again, absolutely. And,
well, I appreciate what you're doing and with your work very much, and I love having this conversation with you.
Well, thank you. Tell us the website again.
ThriveMovement.com.
ThriveMovement.com.
And the movie's available in 20 languages for free there, or you can buy a DVD and support Thrive Movement and the solutions work that we're doing, which you can check out on our solutions hub, also at ThriveMovement.com.
That's great. Kimberly, thank you so much.
The universe responds to a combination of two things: passionate intent and unconflicted behavior. This is a motto that Kimberly Carter Gamble has lived by during the last 9 years in the making of Thrive. Hers is a beautiful blend of gentle spirit and fierce warrior for human justice. Although she knows that it will take much effort to march toward the solution she and Foster have so clearly articulated, she is absolutely hopeful that in the end, we will all thrive. To learn more about this amazing project, where you can view the movie for free and get information about how to get involved and make a difference, visit thrivemovement.com. Thanks for listening to Conscious Inquiry, a special presentation of ConsciousLifeNews.com. I'm Alexis Brooks.